by this person who was wanted and innocently going to call that parole officer to find out whether this was the person in question and was eligible for this assistance, the parole officer volunteered to your co-worker that there was a want out on this person and what the heck are they doing in your office?
Basically.
Worse to that effect. Is that right?
Basically.
Okay. Mm-hmm. At which point your co-worker came to you and said, you're not going to believe this, but this person over here who is in here trying to get assistance is actually warrant or felony warrant out of Clark County, Washington. Correct?
When he found out that by talking to the parole officer that she was wanted, then he became very upset, and I asked him what his problem was, because he was sitting back there moaning and groaning, and I'm going, wait, you know, there's something wrong here. Yeah. What's wrong with you? And he told me that, and I said, well, go to the manager and tell him what your problem is.
And what happened then?
Then I went back to my desk.
And then what happened?
Then the there was a meeting that all the supervisors and manager went to.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lead person in that particular part of the office. So when she came in, a co-worker pointed her out to me, told me to go next door and tell the parole and probation officer that she was in the office. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did.
You were directed to do this?
Yes, I was.
By whom were you directed to do this?
A
superior?
No,
a co-worker. An equal. A co-equal in the office.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. At that point, you did, and they came and picked this person up.
No.
No. What happened?
Well, then when I was over there telling him that she was there, another co-worker came over and said, don't say anything, and I said, well, you're too late.
Damage is done.
Yep.
Okay. And then they went over to visit with this person.
Nope.
Yeah.
What did they do?
Well, then she left, and I found out later that they waited for her to leave because of the way the doors are. They waited for her to leave. When she got outside of our office, then they instructed her to come into their office, and then they arrested her over there.
At that point.
Right.
Okay. At which point...
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hill.
There was an occasion during this string of occurrences in which the local office contacted the Salem office, which is proper procedure.
Okay.
And Karen didn't do that contact, so she wasn't directly related to it. The contact was made... And I believe, in fact, there were three different calls altogether. The question was put to the Salem office, consistent with company policy, agency policy, mm-hmm. can we tell the cops about the wanted felon? And company policy came back, you can only tell the parole officer in Washington. You can only tell the parole officer in Washington, which they did. And the parole officer called the local parole and probation office and said, can you help us catch this person?
So the Washington office called
back to the Springfield parole and probation office and said, can you help us catch this person? They said, we'd love to, but we don't know who she is, where she lives, or what she looks like.
At which point,
they came over to the employment division and spoke to, I'm not sure which individual, and said, can you help us get the person that's wanted? And their response, pursuant to company policy, is no.
So they went back to their office.
They went back to their office. Now there were several people involved in the discussion in the Springfield office by this point, but company policy had come down from the Salem office. The assistant director had said, "Thou shalt not tell the local law enforcement officers that you've got a wanted felon on a drug charge, probation violation." So, what happened was the net result was that notice was given to the parole and probation office, and there were a number of individuals involved, and the appeal of the firing is talking about exactly who said what when, and both sides disagree apparently on who said what when.
But apparently
the net result was the felon was arrested, several employees were sanctioned, the manager was if I'm permitted to make an observation, a personal observation, was required to retire. And a couple other employees got messages in their files, and Karen got fired. And the AFS employee who was acting on contract with the Employment Division to do the targeted jobs tax credit eligibility work, who first found out about the wanted person, who made the call to Clark County to verify her eligibility, was immediately transferred back to AFS. He was not wanted to work for the Employment Division anymore under contract. So that was the outcome of this case. However, despite all that, despite the personal sacrifice these individuals have made, we did arrest a wanted felon. It's my intent with Senate Bill 1051 is to lessen the pain threshold in apprehended wanting felons in the future. I think the pain threshold is far too high. It's unfair to these employees to have to go through this. If you were given the choice, or if I was given the choice, of closing our eyes to a wanted felon receiving services, sending them out to an employer, send them to Senator Houck's contracting firm, for instance. We're going to send them out there, and you knew that person was subject to a felony warrant for arrest, and your company, your boss, Salem head office, said, don't tell. Don't tell. Let's keep it a secret. What would you do? That's the question these people had to confront.
Well, there's something else we can say, Senator Hill. There's not much we can do about bad judgment on the part of the people who second-guessed what happened here, but we've got the ability, with hindsight, to call it thoroughgoingly stupid and wrong-headed and ill-conceived and obviously an insult to the public mind, the idea of saying you're going to discipline someone with 12 years state service while upholding a regulation which would let a wanted felon go out to a job interview, there's no way we can let that stand. And there's no way it ought to stand. So there's obviously going to be adjudication on the question. We're not involved in that adjudication. It's not being adjudicated here. But we're permitted to have our personal opinions. Mm-hmm. And my personal opinion is the whole thing is just stupid.
Mr. Chairman, if I can add one more thought. This problem, we've been talking about the Employment Division, but each agency who serves a client population has this kind of problem from time to time. They're going to encounter this sooner or later. I asked several other agencies, Children's Services Division, what they would do. And Bill Thomas, the administrator, was kind enough to write me back. We do have a policy that requires that we report to the state police any information we have on a person for whom we conduct a criminal records check when the LEDS, that's the law enforcement data system, shows an outstanding warrant. However, in the absence of a general policy, branches function differently in reporting. They have discretion. So what we have is a problem in the state. We have different confidentiality requirements for each agency. We have some branches doing one thing, some agencies doing another thing. We have very inconsistent approach. We have a statute that says all public officials shall cooperate with law enforcement officers to enforce the laws. However, there's confusion as to whether confidentiality statutes particular to an agency override that general policy statement. What that section of Senate Bill 1051 that requires reporting would do is make it consistent across all public agencies to fulfill that policy statement, cooperate with local law enforcement officials insofar as apprehending people you reasonably suspect to be wanted under a felony warrant for arrest. A standard policy, one phone number to call, one way to handle it. That's equal treatment, too.
Senator Howe.
Larry, I think I agree with the thrust of where you're going. I've got some looking at it to try to not make it so broad and flip the thing so far the other side, because the terms reasonably believes is evidence of. is an awful subjective clause, and would you want to make sure that there isn't a case here or produce a case of a disgruntled employee spreading a whole bunch of other information mm-hmm. throughout the system with the employer having no type of recourse whatsoever mm-hmm. is the flip side of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
In the thrust, I agree with what you're trying to do. I'm a little bit afraid of that term, mm-hmm. reasonable, because it's so subjective that a person could claim, I reasonably believe that this guy is doing this and this and this and this without any kind of factual information connected to it. That's one concern I have. The other one is back here, is in Section 9. Why have you got the emergency clause?
The emergency clause, Senator Houck, I added simply to accelerate the implementation of the Act.
Well, but you realize what
it
that
wouldn't
does.
Have any retroactive effect, of course, on Karen's case.
Well, okay. I hate to see an emergency clause go on unless it really is an emergency, mm-hmm. because it takes away another right that citizens have, and that's by the emergency clause takes away the right of initiative here.
Referendum. Yeah. It would not do any damage to the bill to delete the emergency clause. It would just delay its implementation.
Well, the thrust of it, I guess, the Section 5, I don't have any problem with as far as the reporting of a felon. I would like to hear the other side of the coin from the Employment Division to see it's so far one way that there's got to be some reason, mm-hmm. you know, for them coming down like that. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Mr. Chairman, nothing we do here can affect Karen's situation. That's in the process right now, and it's being negotiated. Maybe it'll come out in a positive way, or maybe it won't. It's an unfortunate thing because it's hurt Karen and her family. This is all prospective effect. Mm-hmm. So
maybe under a work session we can work on some other language that mm-hmm. would protect an employer's rights here for some disgruntled employee spreading mm-hmm. pretty malicious stuff.
Well, I think we've got not only sub one but also language which the chair has asked and drafted to provide for a right of action against a person, a state employee, and the agency for willful or malicious or other reckless disregard causing damage to the reputation or causing an actual tort. And Senator Hill has mm-hmm. said that's not that would be a friendly amendment.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Shoemaker.
I have a couple of questions or observations regarding Section 5, Subsection 2, which is the mandate to blow the whistle.
Mm-hmm.
And one cuts one way and one cuts the other. Why do you limit it to felony warrant instead of any warrant?
The intent there was to direct it to the more serious offender, the person who might represent a danger to a significant danger, either because they might be violent, they might be people who've practiced property damage at a felony level. So it was an attempt to target the significant danger that a person might represent.
I'm wondering if it might not be an improvement rather than to mandate it, because I can see all kinds of implications from that, particularly if somebody doesn't know about the law and doesn't know that's what they're supposed to do, and there also could be family concerns and all kinds of things. To maybe say that notwithstanding any other law or rule, when an employee reasonably believes blah, 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 the employee may and is encouraged to promptly and without delay. In other words, clearly make it proper to do that, but not require that they do it. Mm-hmm. There's something about that mandate that kind of sticks in my craw a little bit.
Mr. Chairman, there's many things mandated upon employees in the state, many, many things. Yeah. And, of course, ignorance of those mandates isn't an excuse. For instance, you can't discriminate. If you discriminate in offering services, you have no excuse. You're not supposed to do that. It's a mandate. In this would be similar in that it's something you're supposed to do. I tried to mitigate the requirement to report by not imposing a sanction if they fail. You probably get a lecture. That's about the most you get if you fail to observe the mandatory reporting. If we don't have mandatory reporting, we run into the danger of inequitable treatment of people mm-hmm. who would fall in that class. Why should we report one wanted felon and not report the next? If we look at wanted felons, that's not fair to one because it doesn't treat them equally. The wanted felon gets his or her day in court, perhaps they've already had it, like this one woman who was arrested. She was wanted for probation violation. But theoretically, they get the day in court, they get the fair judgment of their peers through our jury system, and all we're doing is ensuring that they have the opportunity to have that fair day in court by making sure they are caught.
Regarding the mandates over here on Section 7, Sub 2, where you mm-hmm. provide that the Personnel Division by rule shall assure that the requirements of this 1989 Act are applied uniformly. Seems mm-hmm. to be an invitation to the Personnel Division to construct appropriate, what they deem to be appropriate mandates for this requirement to blow the whistle, you know, if you do not do it. So it could be that your mandates are going to get in here, but they're going to get in here by administrative decision rather than statutory decision.
Well, Senator, if we said may promptly and without delay report, there's no way the Personnel Division could mandate that they shall report.
Well, that's what I'm suggesting. If we made it may instead of shall, that maybe we'd accomplish our objective of people wanting to do as mm-hmm. as you did. But feeling constrained by some internal pressure. Well, we can discuss it more in work session.
Let me get off the stand so that the other folks can testify. But let's continue the discussion. I just wanted to point out that Kentucky, Missouri, Pennsylvania, Hawaii, Minnesota, and New Hampshire, and New Jersey all have whistleblower laws approximately the same as this. I took this language from those existing laws. So we will be in the company of a number of other states if we adopt this legislation.
We've got nine other witnesses, and
thank you.
The chair will be otherwise occupied in hearing room E and a subcommittee, and ask the members to, if there's a need, I will return and ask Senator Hill to fill in.
The fourth seems to be now down to a subcommittee.
When are we in the field?
I have an appointment along with you.
Oh, yeah.
Did you make 5 o'clock appointments?
I left it now. What am I supposed to say?
Okay. where's our list? See, Chuck Sherwood?
Yeah, the two.
We're down to two, but I think that I think we still have a quorum. One is out in the hall.
Well, Mr. Chairperson, other committee members, I'm Chuck Sherwood and retired from the State Employment Division on December 1, 1988, after 18 years with the division. 12 of these years were in management positions. Prior to my retirement, I was a manager of the Springfield Employment Office and served in that position for 7 years. Senate Bill 1051 addresses some problems that have existed for state employees for some time. In the division in which I worked, it was a policy that no employees would discuss division matters with members of the Legislative Assembly unless authorized by a member of the executive staff. Employees were always afraid of being labeled as a troublemaker and hurting their promotional opportunities. It was just a general feeling throughout the agency of that. Section 5 of the bill addresses an area that needs to be changed to make state employees more at ease in their job, cooperate with law officials, and to assist in a war against crime. I was recently involved in an incident like this in the Springfield office. After it hit the news media, the present law prevented after the local employers learned of this incident through the news media, I received various calls from employers and applicants, and they were appalled by this rule. Several employers stated they would never use the Employment Division again, since we cannot screen out this type of an individual. To provide the kind of service employers in Oregon deserve, this provision needs to be changed.
Question?
Yeah, you're talking about the Halsey incident that we just...
Yes.
Okay. And
I was a manager of the office at the time.
Are you the one that fired her? Or
no.
Are you one of the ones who was disciplined for... I don't know which one of the players you were.
I was a manager of the office, and my recommendation for disciplinary action was different than from my boss.
What was yours?
A letter of reprimand. That was mine.
But you did not think it appropriate for her to blow the whistle.
Our present law is against employees are not supposed to do it, okay? I don't believe in the law. I think the law is incorrect.
You think you should encourage the employees to do it?
I think employees should. We should have the right. The employees should have the right to blow
the whistle.
Yes.
We'll just use that phrase. Do you think they should be required to blow the whistle?
Yes.
Required?
Yes.
Okay.
We are fighting. I think crime in this country is a big problem. If we encourage it, which is what we are presently doing, I don't think it's right. And I think that yes, an employee should be required to report a known felon.
Okay. As we heard the story, it sort of sounded like Ms. Hulsey didn't take the initiative to blow the whistle, but she was sort of following directions from somebody else and sort of happened to be the one who conveyed the information, but it wasn't.
From the information I received, yes, she was in another employee. I don't know if I should use the word coerced, or it was agreement that she would do it.
I see. So there was a little conspiracy here to get around the rules that would have prevented it.
Yes.
So they knew what they were doing.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I have a question, Chuck. Mm-hmm. If we require in the reporting of people who are wanted, should there be any penalty for not doing so?
I don't think that should be in the law. I think that should be left up to the division, through the disciplinary action process.
Okay. According to some consistent policy adopted by the personnel division?
Each division, each state agency, has a progressive disciplinary action process. Hmm. And I don't think you can say if you don't do it, you will get 1 month suspension of pay or reduction in pay, one-step reduction in pay, or something like this. I think it would have to depend upon the circumstances.
Let me ask kind of a reverse question. If it was permissive that said you may, it's mm-hmm. not in conflict with any existing confidentiality statutes. If you report, you may report a wanted person. What kind of guidance, or how would people make decisions at the office level?
Well, I think you'd get away from this consistency there, in as much as if a person would come in and if an employee didn't want to take the time to do it, well, then say, well, why do it? I don't have the time to do it. I don't have time to go tell my supervisor. Then I think there would be incidents where cases would not be reported. Hmm. I think if the word shall, I think it puts more teeth into it. Hmm. And I think that a person should do it. Mm-hmm. That with our fight against crime, yeah, I think we should do it.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thanks. Mary Ann Guest? She is not here. Art James, Executive Department. Art?
Yes.
Welcome.
Hello. My name is Art James with the Executive Department, Personnel and Labor Relations Division. I'm here to testify in opposition to Senate Bill 1051. As the author mentioned, Senate Bill 1051 does a number of different things. some of those things are actually unnecessary, we believe. If I may, under current statute, ORS 240.316, subsection 5, states the following. No employee shall be subject to discipline action or separation for disclosure not prohibited by law of violations of laws, rules, other improper actions, or inefficiency of a superior officers or fellow employees. The division, meaning the Personnel Labor Relations Division of the Executive Department, shall A, establish a procedure whereby employees may report wrongdoing or inefficiency, B, prohibit reprisals against employees because of their disclosures, C, protect employees against reprisals because of their disclosures, and D, establish an appeal procedure for employees who suffer reprisal because of their disclosure. That is enabling legislation which has given the Executive Department, Personnel Labor Relations Division, authority to make rule. In our rule, our personnel rule, 1-6-1, we outline in a 5-page rule, which I won't read into the record, the procedures.
Excuse me, do we have this, do we have this in writing, this testimony? It sounds very specific, but I was leafing through my file and I don't find it. Do we have it?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry.
Can you get that to us if you don't have it yet in writing?
Yes, I will.
Because that'll certainly help me, and then I can just listen to you, and I'm not going to have to try to make a bunch of notes about all these things.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Shoemaker, I apologize for not getting this together. I did this work just this afternoon and didn't have a chance to get it to the committee. In any event, what is covered in that section of the law basically speaks to inefficiency and wrongdoing by public officials in the execution of their duties. Another section of the current ORS, ORS 240-740, identity of an employee who reports violation of confidential information, states the following. The identity of an employee who discloses information which the employee reasonably believes shows any of the following shall not be disclosed without written consent of the employee during an investigation of information or any related matters. A, violation of law or rule. B, gross waste of funds. C, abuse of authority. D, specific danger to public health or safety.
Now, I have a question at this point. This is a section that we're amending in Section 7.
Right.
Who does the employee report the violation of law or rule, gross waste of funds, abuse of authority, or specific danger to public health and safety to under the existing statute? It says the identity of the employee who discloses information shall not be disclosed without the written consent of the employee.
Mr. Chairman, under personnel rule cited earlier, the procedure for reporting, the employee generally reports to their immediate supervisor or to the appointing authority.
So if they have complaints against their immediate supervisor or appointing authority, they report to them about the complaints.
Mr. Chairman, isn't
that kind of having the fox guard the in-house?
Mr. Chairman, not only is there a reporting to the supervisor, manager, or appointing authority, there is also built into that rule the potential for appealing that to the Employment Relations Board or the Court of Appeals through the normal agency grievance procedure.
They have to go through their immediate supervisor first.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
And also, the protection of the identity is provided in sub 1 of 740, and sub 2 says, no disciplinary action shall be taken against any employee for the disclosure of any alleged activity described in subsection 1 of this section under investigation or for any related activity. That seems to key it to a reported activity that's under investigation. And I'd ask, whose investigation is that, and what about an occasion where there's not an investigation underway? It seems to strip the protection away from a person who reports something that is not under investigation.
Mr. Chairman, the end of that particular subsection says, under investigation or for any related activity. Is your question, does that mean that the item disclosed needs to be under investigation in order for this to kick in?
I'm trying to determine the extent of the protection that you're saying 740 provides. It appears to me that it provides some protection when something is under investigation. And I'm not sure what or for any related activity means. And that's the other, under investigation or for any related activity. So maybe this will take some additional thought to try to figure out what the effect of the current statute is. And it would be beneficial to me if we could have an indication of how many people have utilized the procedure that is provided in 740 and also in 240.316 sub 5, which you also indicated. Mm-hmm. It solves the problem. Has that been utilized, and when has that been utilized? It's my understanding that there's no adequate protections in current state law, that the utility provided by the existing...
abuses that both of you have referred to and other witnesses have referred to. I also see that it can be used for mischievous purposes as well, to disrupt an organization, to report on what someone perceives as mismanagement, which upon cooler analysis would not be seen as such, but which could be very disruptive to the chain of command. And so I see that the thing could be abused, either intentionally or innocently, and I'm troubled how to fashion it so that we can cure the abuses which are out there and at the same time not open up to new abuses. I'm wondering, and I might ask these witnesses how they would respond to this, if there were some kind of an ombudsman possibly already in place who could be the line of communication for this sort of thing, so that that ombudsman, who isn't the legislature or the governor or somebody, mm-hmm. who could come down hard, the ombudsman then could receive the information and try to find out if it's really a problem, if there's really an abuse, could kind of check with the agency and see whether, you know, how this thing sits, and sort of sift out the times when the whistle probably shouldn't have been blown, but see to it that the whistle is heard when it should have been. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering how you would respond if we could come up with something that does that, how you'd respond to that.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Shoemaker, I'd have to get back to my organization on the idea of the ombudsman. However, the amendments that were proposed by Senator Cairns, I thought, might address some of that, because these people could be reprimanded or be legally held accountable if they were flagrantly trying to abuse their positions to respond.
Senator Huff?
The problem with the private right of action, you've got to show damage before there's any kind of, and that's kind of a, in other words, you can go it, but the defense against the private right of action, how were you damaged? Okay. And, you know, what that damage would be, or would it be dollars and cents or reputation or whatever. It's an awful hard thing to prove.
Yeah.
You can prove it. You can prove that they said that. Proving the damage is a difficult thing to prove.
Yes.
Dennis Phillips,
yeah.
Chairman Hill, and Senator Shoemaker. I'd like to comment on that. I think the bill itself, just by being implemented, would automatically put pressure upon upper management to automatically make them feel that if they do mess up, break the rules, whatever, that there's going to be a state employee there watching them, and that they can turn them in, and there's nothing that they'll be able to do about it.
Well, that's
without this bill, at least in our situation, they can do all they want to and do.
I see your point that it, the existence of the bill would have a salutary
intimidation
purpose,
if you will.
But do you see my point that it could be used
yes.
mischievously? And do you agree that if we can find a way to alleviate that, that might not be a bad idea?
Senator Howe.
Well, that's the point that I was going to put. That's exactly the point. That, yes, that's the reason I look very favorably on that portion of the bill, saying that there's nothing in there that would offend me or would tear down that particular relationship. It's the other side. It's when the law is misused. Mm-hmm. Exactly how management is misusing their authority now in the case of trying to hide or cover up something illegal. You know, it's how to devise a law that will not be for the 99% of the time that you get the labor management relationship. It's that 1% that are going to violate it, either in the management side or the labor side, and cause abuses. Because you could take this tool and do some real damage into the management side of it if you wanted to.
I wonder if I might address that somewhat. Tom Johnson.
Yeah.
I guess my feeling would be is that you people are more able to decide what the law needs to be. We're just here stating what the law has been and what the effect of it has been.
Yeah.
I don't know how long the existing law has been in effect, but I do know that it took some of these people 20 years to say anything, to finally come forward and when they decided they'd had enough.
Well, but you have had state police investigations for years over alleged wrongdoing, and a lot of wrongdoing, not only in public agencies, but in private agencies.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing, similar to just about where you are right now, is you've got a full-fledged investigation. In fact, it's been going on 2 or 3 years now into that particular issue right there. They just can't get all of, they know it's there. They can't get the proof to hang the people.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
I'm real familiar with the process, as you know.
Okay.
I've been in it up to my neck for quite some time.
Part of the difficulty is revealed in that this memo, which contains a number of allegations about the physical plant administration at U of O, is anonymous because people are afraid of retaliation, and it makes investigation a bit more difficult. The protection of people who come forward with information would hopefully resolve, that kind of problem that we have with that investigation. If we had a provision, if we amended this bill with a provision, first of all, that in order to enjoy these protections, an employee should have first gone to their immediate supervisor and complained or raised the issue, because maybe it was really just an oversight. And then if there is no action or no response, and the action, the problem continued, then the employee would be able to report it outside the agency without fear of retaliation. They'd have protection against retaliation. That's one way we might, that's one additional step we might take to prevent potential abuse of a particular, by a particular employee who's disgruntled. We'd ensure that at least they go to their immediate supervisor first, but they couldn't be fired for doing that, for taking that particular step either. I think also, Senator Shoemaker, we could look at lines 2 of page 2, and also down on line 33, and Senator House, at the level of proof that we're asking the employee to have. That is, currently they're protected if they disclose any information that the employee reasonably believes is evidence of these violations. We might want to talk about a higher level of confidence in the information. Down on the bottom, on line 30, 32 and 33, this is the this is supposed to discourage abuse, and it says that if the information is known by the employee to be false, or it's disregarded, or it's disclosed with reckless disregard for its truth or falsity, then the employee is not protected under the Act. We might want to look at that level of proof, too, and adjust the levels of proof as a way to discourage abuse. Because I think we do want to discourage abuse by a disgruntled employee, while at the same time we want to permit disclosure by an employee who has something that's actually there to disclose. So we have to strike that balance. I think that's what you're
at,
that balance.
Senator Hill?
Mm-hmm.
I was just, that one part about... you were just mentioning, I don't think it's written in here, where someone could go to their immediate supervisor first.
Yeah, that would have to be added.
Okay. If that person were the person they were going to report, would they just go to the next person up then, under that?
Yeah, I think so.
The next one up.
So that would be the
person. And we'd have to put in the protections for an employee doing that. They would have to guarantee protection from retaliation for doing that. And then if they've gone through those hoops, you know, they've tried the regular channels, then they can go outside with protection. So that's we can put that in. As for a third party, the Ethics Commission or some other third party kind of screening or evaluating, an ombudsman, I don't have a concept of how that could be successful yet. For instance, if we had all these reports go to the Ethics Commission, just theoretically, and the Ethics Commission screened them to see if they were reasonably based on available evidence. I'm not sure the Ethics Commission has the capability or the desire to do that first. It sounds like a full-fledged investigation would be necessary if we're actually going to test whether the person has reasonable grounds. If we leave it to the individual reporting to decide their own level of risk, saying you're taking a risk unless you have good grounds. You better have good grounds or else you can get nailed. As long as we make that message clear to the employees of the state and all those political subdivisions, it seems to me we could expect the employees to make a reasoned judgment as to whether they can take that risk or not. Are their grounds good enough? We have to be careful, once again, about that balance, because we don't want to have them make the judgment that, no, they're not going to take the risk, even though they do have reasonable grounds. So it's a tough one, and I took my best shot at it, the language here.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not claiming it's the perfect language in a long shot. So I think we could work on that, try to work on that, and address the potential for abuses of a disgruntled employee while allowing reporting of the breaking of the law or misuse of public funds that we want to expose. So we'll just have to try to strike that balance and work on the language. Do you have any anything else you'd like to contribute?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else like to testify?
Yes.
Nobody else? Okay. Chuck?
No, I was just going to say goodbye to him. I've worked with him before.
Okay. Let's see. Nothing else come before the committee. The public hearing. Pardon? We can go home now. Public hearing on Senate Bill 1051 is closed, and we are adjourned. Thank you.